2 Samuel chapter 14. Great book. I don't have the roll book today. Absalom was banished, and he was heir to the throne after the death of Amnon, his brother. And he was banished from the kingdom, and Joab worked behind the king's back. Joab did what was best for the kingdom. When David was locked into a situation and couldn't forgive Absalom, Joab intervened and got this wise woman full of this make-believe story and caused the king to kind of come to a conclusion concerning an event that she made up and Joab put in her mouth. And so by the time he was done, he started suspecting that this whole thing was a make-believe story. So he says, "Is the hand of Joab with thee in all this?" Verse 19, chapter 14. The woman said, "My lord the king, none can turn to the right hand or to the left from aught that my lord the king has spoken." In other words, a lot of flattery here. So anyway, David brought Joab back to the kingdom, Absalom back to the kingdom, and Joab did this for the kingdom's sake. Absalom's going to be the next king. He's got to intervene. Verse 25, "In all Israel there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. From the sole of his foot, even to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him." Here we've got another one of these good-looking guys, like Saul. Hey, don't turn out to be the best spiritually. "When he polled his head," that means cut his hair, "it was at every year's end that he polled it, because the hair was heavy on him." Well, he was a real glamour babe. "Therefore he polled it. He weighed the hair of his head 200 shekels after the king's weight." Josephus estimates this from 7.5 ounces or to 3 pounds. Now, that's a lot. That's pretty heavy for hair. And so there are ways that the weight of hair is thought to be figured out. And they said, well, he put gold dust in his hair. And when you ride on your chariot, you know, you got a lot of nice-looking hair there, buddy. It flames in the sun. And that was a custom. Another way is they put a lot of oils in their hair, and not showering every day like we do, it got heavy. I really don't know how Absalom's hair got to be so heavy. Maybe it was a way that they kept the hair or something. But Absalom was good-looking, and he knew it, and he was quite vain in his personality. Chapter 15. You can read the rest of the narrative. "Came to pass after this that Absalom prepared him chariots and horses and 50 men for a motorcade. Absalom rose up early and stood beside the way of the gate. It was so that when any man had a controversy, came to the king for judgment, Absalom called unto him and said, 'Of what city art thou?' And he said, 'Thy servant is one of the tribes of Israel.' Absalom said unto him, 'Good, thy matters are good and right, and there is no man deputed of the king to hear thee.'" Well, do you know in counseling there's two sides to every story? So Absalom always took everybody's side. Brother, your wife is treating you like dirt. Why, what we ought to do here? In other words, he's always taken the side of the person. Oh, do people love this kind of a counselor? Of course, there's the other person that doesn't like this kind of a counselor at all. But then when he talks to her, why, her matters are right, and he's a scoundrel. And if you talk straight, neither one of them like you. They want a new counselor. Don't you know that's the way it is? Well, you keep appealing and you're going to end up with the pastor. And when he's done with you, there won't be anywhere else to go. Believe me, he can be rougher than the counselors. By the way, some have appealed him. Verse 4. Oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man which hath a suit or a cause might come to me, and I would do him justice. Yeah, wouldn't you do him justice? Do you know that everybody can't be right? In every case, you can plan on a compromise and negotiations being necessary. In every case, both sides have to give. In our situation, one person is under demonic torment and another person has a mega. Both sides have to give. It's the only solution. Those under demonic torment think the mega's out of balance. The mega thinks they're always manifesting at me, and that's why I'm the way I am. And they say they're neglecting me, and that's the way I am. Everybody's justified in the way they are. Both sides have to give. Actually, the person with the connection really has more responsibility on them. If they're getting God, they need to minister and bring it home. And I know, I've heard, you know, you bring it home and bleh. But really, both sides have to give. There has to be compromise. The one person has to quit manifesting, and the other person has to make sure they're secure and minister. And there's a lot that can be said on both of these, but neither party is going to be absolutely right. Neither one. They think they're right, but they're both going to have to give, and they're probably going to have to give 50-50. That's probably what's going to happen. Verse 5. It was so that when any man came nigh to him to do him obeisance, he put forth his hand and took him and kissed him. And on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. Well, he began to undermine King David. He began to go out and love the people and take everybody's side. There are people like this. There are politicians. They will go and they'll speak to the Save the Whale anti-nuke group or something, and I mean they're all for them. Then they'll go speak to some Christian convention, and they're all for them. And I go, my, how can a politician be a chameleon so fast? I mean, he is all things to all people, and there's no way, he can do that. It's amazed me. I have watched this. I have watched them say, you know, I mean, they can go to the labor union and please them and to management and please them. And I thought, no way. I personally don't respect politicians that hide their stand and are always mealy-mouthed about everything. They're just trying to get into office. Who knows what they're going to do when they get there? And some of these people that are just real forthright in their stand, I have more respect for them even if I don't agree with their stand. A lot of mealy-mouthed politicians around. Now, we can say all we want about Absalom, but what about the men of Israel? Your typical church. This has happened. Good pastor in a church, an evangelist comes in. My, don't the people love him? I mean, the evangelist preaches these sermons, and I mean, they are more anointed, and he may be a very strong motivational, emotional speaker. Wow, what a speaker. What you don't know is that he preaches that sermon everywhere he goes, and he's got it down to an art. All the gestures are memorized. This is the honest truth. All the gestures. I know a man that came to this country with a total of 5 sermons. That's all he had, was 5 sermons. Now, God gave him the 5 sermons, and they were good sermons. And he could preach them with a delivery and dynamics, and he was all over the platform. It was powerful. And what he did was he took his 5 sermons and he went from place to place to place to place to place, because God gave him 5 sermons to preach to America, and he went all around and preached. I heard one of them one time and I was impressed. It was a very good message. But the people in the church are fickle to the pastor who teaches them day in and day out, and oh, they want this guy now. What they don't know is he's going to run out of sermons. I know a pastor one time where this happened, and the evangelist took over the church and kicked out the pastor. And the congregation loved him. But easy come, easy go. I know another case where a man came in and the pastor recognized that this evangelist was going to take over his church. And the people were going to vote him out and everything. And so he got on the bandwagon. Oh, isn't this wonderful, everybody? Don't you want him to stay? And he stayed, and he stayed, and he stayed, and he stayed until he preached himself out. And he left. He ran out of sermons. Him preaching, and the evangelist didn't have that many sermons. I mean, he wasn't getting, you know, from the Lord. He wasn't a teacher. He wasn't able to go into the Word and, you know, and continually teach and build things. He had motivational sermons, and those were good, and they're impacting, and they can go into a church where people are kind of plateaued and yank them up a little bit, and that can be a valid ministry. It can be good. A lot of churches have digressed to that point where they have a circuit of people coming through, yanking them emotionally all the time. I'm just wondering what the end result of it all is. If a person had a real ministry and could put something in them that wouldn't leave when he left, that'd be good. The people of Israel are fickle. They're fickle. And I want you to know that this is the way people are. This is really the way. I think there's more loyalty in our church than any church I've ever seen. But there's been fickleness here. There has been. 8 years ago, there was this big thing. And all this going through the congregation about the sins of the pastor and all that. I couldn't believe it. I was really ashamed of the church. I mean, I go by what the anointing is and the ministry and everything else. I don't go by all this stuff. I don't know what in the world is going on here anyway. And some of it's happening again now. Well, people are fickle. I know they're fickle. They'll be fickle to you. Russ Barnett went to a church, started a church, built the building with his own hands, paid for the building, got the whole thing going, had a good church. A man came in, they voted him out, voted another man in. Russ was out, had nothing to say about it. That was the end of that. He went on with God. I don't know that they did. I don't know what happened to them. Russ went on with God. No, I mean, you know, he went on. He accepted it. That kind of thing happened. I don't doubt that Paul might have lost a church or two. He feared about the Galatians. He feared he's going to lose them to the Judaizers, and they might turn against him. This kind of thing happens. We've lost some of our satellite churches. And some things that have happened haven't been right, haven't been ethical. Go ahead.
Can you comment on this very point as far as, is that the reason why you don't have people come into the church as far as, say, to this church in particular to share? I know in the past it's had like Lester Sumrall or different people that have come in from outside. At the time that I've been here, they haven't had anybody come in. Is it because they don't have much to share, or is it just because...
It's not because we fear people taking over. At this state of maturity our congregation is in, you'd have to be the Apostle Paul to take over. I mean, you'd really have to have something. When Lester Sumrall came here, some people were critical of his eccentricities. I mean, there's, you know, out in the church world, there's maybe a gullibility and a fickleness to their pastor. Here, there seems to be a super spirituality and a criticalness towards outsiders. And I don't say that in general, but that tends to be there. If Billy Graham came to our church, I wouldn't sit there and criticize him because he's not spirit-filled or he does do certain things. I'd receive his ministry. He's a good preacher. I'd receive it. I'd receive anybody who comes. I wouldn't look to, you know, right there. Right there. See, you know, that people are so worried about it. I'd receive. I'd look for something good. Sumrall came here because he had something to give us. He really had something to give us, and he ministered, and it was good. It was a real faith booster. And it's mainly finding ministries that are really have something from the Lord that they can give us. And so we probably don't need the motivational preachers because we have that. We probably don't need the teachers per se. We have that. What we need are people that could come in and heal the sick or some of the areas that maybe we don't have. And I'm not so sure there's a lot of those kind of people around. So it's mainly finding somebody. Lester Summerall actually had a ministry that we could really benefit from. We've had others in. They really had something to give us from the Lord. And, you know, there are those that that do have something. We just, you know, aren't in really that much in contact with them. And so we're not, you know, we're not closed off in that way, but just you have to, they have to have a purpose of being here. I personally, you know, there's things going on at Casey Treats Church. I haven't gone yet, but others have gone. It was good. Who was over there just recently? Dr. Cho is over there. I heard it was very good. There's other people around the city. I've gone to different things. I went down and heard Dwight Thompson down at the Tacoma, what is it, People's Church down there. He's a terrific motivational preacher. I'm sure he covered every square foot of the auditorium before he was done. You know, he was a very good motivational speaker. He had one theme, and he preached for an hour on it. I didn't learn anything. I know somebody in this church that's listened to every sermon that Jimmy Swaggart has preached in the last 3 years. He says, I've never learned one thing from him. But it's very motivational. It keeps me abreast of what's going on out here, because Jimmy is abreast of what's going on. He's preaching out here to the country. And he says, I'm receiving from it. I don't learn anything, but I'm receiving. But I'd like to get out to some of these things more often, but I honestly am in a place where I wouldn't skip a Friday night service to go. I'd get more here. And that's just the way it's always been for me. So even in my worst moments, I'd get more out of Friday night service. Anyway, I know that the more things will open up in the future, because I'm sure we're going to be more united with the body. So chapter 15, verse 7, after 40 years. Well, there's a textual thing here. It's impossible that it could be 40 years. The versions say 4 years. Some Hebrew manuscripts say 40 days. Those that say it is 40 years say it refers back to some previous event. After 40 years. After, from whence? I mean, back to the time when Samuel died or something? I mean, it's hard to put a starting point to it. But if it be 40 days, then it would be back from when Absalom began to undermine and build something within the church. If it be 4 years, then it's probably the same thing. Absalom set up a rebellion within the church. There have been a lot of Absaloms in the church. Verse 10, he sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel. Verse 11, 200 went with Absalom, not knowing what was going on. Verse 13, there came a messenger to David saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom. Now, why did David flee and not fight Absalom? David did not want civil war in the kingdom. David did not want his brethren fighting over him. And so he abandoned Jerusalem and put the matter in God's hands. Besides that, they felt that perhaps strength-wise they might be outmanned, even though with David were proven mighty men. Verse 23, all the country wept with a loud voice. All the people passed over. The king also passed over the brook. And Zadok and the Levites, he sent them back. The king put himself in God's hands. Verse 25, keep the ark in Jerusalem. If I find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he'll bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. Chapter 16. You can read the rest of the narrative here. Mephibosheth was the son of Jonathan, the grandson of Saul. David had a covenant with Saul, and so he honored Mephibosheth back in a previous chapter and brought him in to dwell with him. And Mephibosheth was lame in his feet. And Ziba was the chief servant of the house of Saul, and Ziba was living high off the hog. He was living off the wealth of the estate of Saul's kingdom. It belonged to Mephibosheth, but he was in Saul and David's house. And so, verse 3, Ziba loaded up a big grocery cart and brought it to David in the wilderness. And so David says, "Where's Mephibosheth?" Ziba said, verse 3, "He abideth at Jerusalem. He said, Today shall the house of Israel restore me the kingdom to my father." Now that was slander. That was a lie. Now you know that that's not right, because a lame man is no way going to get the kingdom. It's either going to be Absalom or David. How is he going to get it? I mean, that can't possibly be right. But Ziba brought David one side of the story, and what did David do? David reacted to it. He said, "Thine are all that pertaineth unto Mephibosheth." And Ziba said, "I beseech thee I may find grace in thy sight, my lord, O king." Just like that, David rendered a judgment, and Mephibosheth became a traitor, condemned, and Ziba became heir of all. Now Ziba should have been judged for this and brought down for this. You know, as a counselor, you listen to one side of the story. I mean, it never ceases to amaze me how different the two sides of the story are. And with as much experience as I've had, still, when I hear one side of the story, it's like, you know, I start to figure out the way it is. And wow, when the other side comes in, boy, am I glad I didn't do anything or say anything or conclude anything except preliminary things. But I mean, you can have the facts. I mean, you can have the facts and the evidence, and I mean, it can look so cold and shut of a case, the other person can come in and bring a whole different side of the story as to why all that happened and things over here and all that over there. And I mean, it's amazing. It's just amazing. There's almost no story that doesn't have another side. I mean, really. Now, this is why gossip is so dangerous, because you're only hearing one side of the story. Not to mention the fact that it has been proven many times that people under demonic emotion and demonic power lie. Just openly lie. I mean, they lie. They absolutely will say, "He did this and this and this." And when you talk to him, he'll say, "I did no such thing. I did no such thing." You talk to her, "Did he do that?" "Yes." He says no. You know, I was talking to Chuck Morin one time, and he says, in reference to this, it's really amazing. He handles liability lawsuits, damage, injuries, and claims. He says, you'll go to court, and there'll be two cars that have collided at an intersection. Both cars are full of people. Both sets of people claim the light was green when they entered the intersection. Everybody claims it was green. And these people swear it was green. I mean, they saw that light was green. And the other people know that light was green. And they all entered a green light and ksh. And there have been some injuries and we're in court in a lawsuit. He says, it's amazing. He says, not only the interpretation of events, but the very events themselves from different people are totally, he says, they're totally different. And he says it makes it very difficult to know what is going on. And Solomon had one of these cases where one woman lied and the other woman, you know, was telling the truth. And who's lying and who's telling the truth? A lot of times they're both not lying, but they're both looking at it from a different viewpoint. And so the stories don't match. But under demon power, people lie. And I don't know whether it's maliciously or just confusion. In their minds, they're just confused. But this is happening. And people listening to this, and I'm talking to people right now that are believing this. I mean, they are really believing it. And, you know, I talked to a person, and this person actually believes that we are going to be openly teaching immorality in the future. He says, it won't be long till you'll be openly teaching immorality. And I said, friend, I said, that proves right there the amount of deception that you are in. That will let you know that you are in deception. Because I said, I promise you that this church will never, ever teach that. Now, the children of God did teach that. They eventually got into that. I said, we will never teach that. I said, I can assure you we won't teach that. If anything, we're going to tighten up, not get more loose. And I said, the fact that you honestly believe that that's where we are shows you the deception you're in. You're in complete deception. You don't even understand what's going on at the chapel. And yet you are acting like an authority and you're out broadcasting to all these people, all this stuff. I said, you're in a bad place before the Lord. But, I mean, people have got things, and then these people come out, and this person is so believable. And he tells them all this stuff. And it's amazing. David erred here by taking Ziba's side of the story. I mean, would Ziba lie? I mean, he came and said, I mean, Mephibosheth said this. Boy, it sounds so convicting. I mean, could there be anything else? Now, let me jump ahead in this particular narrative. David returns to Jerusalem. Verse 24 of chapter 19. Mephibosheth came down to meet the king. He had been, as it were, fasting and etc. since this whole time. The king said, why didn't you go with me, Mephibosheth? Verse 26. My servant deceived me. I said, I will saddle me an ass that I may ride thereon and go to the king. He has slandered thy servant unto my lord the king, but my lord the king as an angel of God do whatever is good in thine eyes. Verse 28. I was dead anyway. I'm not worthy of anything. I'm not asking for anything. Now Mephibosheth brings a totally different side of the story. Verse 29, the king said unto him, why speakest thou any more of thy matters? I have said, thou and Ziba, divide the land. Divide the land? One minute he gives it to Ziba, the next minute divide it. Verse 30, Mephibosheth said unto the king, let him take all. Let him take all. Now David erred in judgment in the first case, and he erred in judgment in the second case. He should have said, Ziba, you're kicked out. You're out for this one. I'm putting you out. You lied, slandered your master, and your motive is to get a hold of the property of Saul, which is probably a wealthy estate, and being chief servant. Oh, by the way, it says over here that Ziba, somewhere it says that Ziba has 20 servants and 14 sons or something like that. I mean, he's more than a servant. I mean, he's into big time. David erred in judgment. And then when the matter came out, he still didn't deal with it in justice. This should have been dealt with. Chapter 17. Now as a counselor and as a person listening to gossip, don't listen to gossip. You're listening to one side of the story. If you're connected to somebody, you know, I have people that I'm connected with. And they tell me different things. I don't take their side of the story. I tell them to go to the cross. I tell them, well, you know, you're going to have to deal with that. And I've had people come to me month in, month out, month in, month out, month in, month out. And I'm not counseling them or anything. I'm just connecting with them. And I've heard their side. I've never even gone to hear their husband's side. Never even gone to hear it. I don't need to hear it. I know that the way this situation is right here, that there's still a problem that needs to be cleared up right here. You know, the way the person's always, and some people, you know, well, he did this and he did this, you know, they're always railing on the other person. See, I know where the problem is. It's right here. You know, if they quit railing on the other person, then maybe I can go talk to the other person and find out what they're really doing. As long as they're in that boat, That's where the problem is. I got together with somebody not too long ago. She's in the church. He's unsaved. He showed up for a counseling meeting. I mean, he's actually submitting to a church counselor, if you can believe that. Unsaved. You know where the problem was? The problem was with the person in the church. That's where the problem was. He sat there and listened to her bellyache about him for about an hour and a half. With me, you know, I was all over her. She wants a new counselor. No, she goes back and forth between, I'm only going to listen to the pastor, and all this kind of thing. But she's in trouble. She's in trouble. She can have a new counselor. I told her she can have a new counselor. I said, I think I can get any counselor you want, but I'm only going to ask one thing. You submit to him. You make a decision ahead of time. You're going to totally submit, absolutely, unquestionably to that counselor. You get one new counselor, and you're going to totally submit. No backing out this time. And if she'll do that, I'll get her a new counselor. But I know what he's going to say, because it's obvious what the problem is. See, I know what's going to happen. She's going to come in and bellyache and bellyache and bellyache, and he's going to say, your problem is right there. You're selfish. Verse 11, Shimei cursed David. Abishai was going to take off his head. That's not the way to treat your enemies. David said to Abishai and to all his servants, behold, my son, which came forth out of my bowels, seeketh my life. How much more now this Benjamite? Let him curse, for the Lord hath bidden him. David is under a demon of guilt and condemnation. This is what I see in verse 11. Legalism. God is chastising me. God has sent a demon-possessed man to come and curse me. Now, I don't believe that for a minute. The devil has sent Shimei to curse David. And because of David's sin, and David feeling, you know, the judgment of God and remembering the prophecy and all that, well, this is God's judgment. In a sense, it is. See, in a sense, it is. But God hasn't bidden him to come and curse you. Now, there are people, Christians, that when calamity hits, it's like, well, God is punishing me. Friend, that is a demonic lie. You are living under a demonic lie. God is not punishing you. The devil is beating on you. God wants to deliver you. God wants to help you. God wants to lift David up. God doesn't want David laboring under some condemnation guilt trip. Let him curse, the Lord hath bidden him. That is a demonic input. It may be that the Lord will look on mine affliction, and that the Lord will requite me good for his cursing this day. Now that isn't too bad. Maybe the Lord will see what the devil is doing to me, and then God will come to my rescue. That isn't so bad. But if it's, well, the Lord will see I've been doing penance long enough, he'll rescue me. That's terrible. That's the way some people feel. Some Christians have a penance thing where they're atoning for their own sin. If they suffered enough, then maybe God will be pleased. I don't know what church you came out of, besides the Catholic Church, or what you've gone through to get you to that point, but rebuke it. Chapter 17. Absalom listened to a counselor. There were two counselors. Ahithophel counseled like an angel of God. Hushai was also a wise counselor. He was an elder counselor. About David, David's generation, perhaps older. He was an old man and didn't go with him, so grandfatherly figure. Ahithophel counseled that Absalom gather all Israel and smite David while he's yet unorganized, fleeing, and generally not prepared to deal with the situation. Now that was wise, practical counsel. Hushai was sent back to frustrate Ahithophel's counsel. So what he's got to do is he's got to counsel something that will cause them to not follow the wise counsel of Ahithophel. So verse 5, call Hushai, let us hear likewise what he saith. Now, I want to paint a picture for you here. Ahithophel, even though Ahithophel's character is bad here, he's working for Absalom, and Hushai's character is good, he's ministering to David, working for David, I want you to see that Hushai, his counsel, is plays like the devil to undermine the truth that is the best counsel. Ahithophel has the best counsel, is the best counsel. Hushai's counsel is the worst counsel. Now notice how Hushai persuades him to follow his counsel. Verse 7. The counsel that Ahithophel hath given is not good at this time. Verse 8. Now the devil comes to you and says, that's not good counsel right now. That, you know, when really it's what you should do. Thou knowest thy father and his men, that they be mighty men. Fear. They be chafed in their minds. The natural. Fear. As a bear robbed of her whelps in the field, and thy father's a man of war. Think about that, Absalom. Besides that, he won't lodge with the people. The idea is to smite David so the kingdom will have only one leader. David won't lodge with the people. He'll be hidden in a pit or, you know, in a cave or under a log or something. I mean, he'll be hard to find. He is hid now in some pit or some other place. It will come to pass, when some of them be overthrown at the first, whosoever heareth it will say, there is a slaughter among the people that follow Absalom. He also that is valiant, whose heart is as the heart of a lion, shall utterly melt. For all Israel knoweth that thy father is a mighty man, and they that be with him are valiant men. Now, the first step of his counsel is to get them to really look at this situation and to be full of fear. Now, David is a mighty man. He slew Goliath, remember. Think about that. And what about all David's mighty men that were with him? The choicest, the most elite troops. And Absalom's got this unwieldy large army of Israel. They will still win. I still think Ahithophel's counsel is the best counsel. But Hushai's been able to instill in him an element of doubt and fear into the council. And then if David and his mighty men are able to defeat some of Absalom's weaker troops, even though they vastly outnumber him, the rest of them will probably flee. Now, that did happen in a lot of battles. As soon as one army sensed that they were losing, they'd all run away, try to save their life. And so there was a lot of momentum and emotional play involved. It's hand-to-hand combat, and so oftentimes it was the side that had the most faith, the most courage. You know, it wasn't the most strength. A lot of it was mental. It's like football today. A team that wants to win more will win oftentimes, and a lot of times they just attribute it to that. They attribute it to will. One team will to win more than the other, not necessarily size, not necessarily talent, not necessarily anything else. On a given day, oftentimes will can determine the team that wins. Then verse 11, I counsel that all Israel be generally gathered unto thee from Dan to Beersheba, and that thou go to battle in thine own person. The second thing is to appeal to pride and Absalom's vanity. Now, don't you know that Absalom has a deep streak of vanity? And so he's able to sell this idea based on that particular demonic manifestation. So we shall come upon him in some place where he shall be found. We will light upon him as the dew falleth on the ground. Notice the confidence in this plan. And the lack of confidence in the other just won't work at all. I mean, that thing will just never get off the ground. But this plan, and of him and all the men that are with him, there shall be not left so much as one. If he be gotten into a city, then shall all Israel bring ropes to that city. We'll draw it into the river. Why, we'll just completely pull every rock out of the city and throw it in the river. There won't be so much as a small stone found there. Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai is better than the counsel of Ahithophel, for the Lord had appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel to the intent that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. Demons manifested in Absalom a vanity and fear and pride and caused him to fall for the unwise counsel. This is what happens to you God's word, you know God's word in your life, but the devil comes along and through fear and some other things, he's able to manipulate you out of the wise counsel. It's so important that we do what we know is right and what we know is the truth. And later, when we're under demonic attack, not lose the vision, not lose our commitment. Hushai's counsel was emotional counsel. It really was. It had the emotional intent of fear and vanity. This is how the devil works on us. Emotional counsel. I mean, stimulate our emotions. Verse 17. Jonathan the Himaz, the priest's sons, loyal to David, snuck out of the city to inform David of this counsel. Verse 17, a wench. What is a wench? This is an old English word for a maidservant, a female servant. So anyway, they ferried the message to King David, and David recognized that they might all attack. They might follow Ahithophel's counsel, so David crossed over the Jordan River to the east side to put some distance between himself and Absalom. Verse 23, Ahithophel hanged himself. Some people think that he was a poor sport. He committed suicide because he couldn't stand it. They didn't follow his counsel. Pink says he could not endure the idea of having to play second fiddle to Hushai. Well, let me say there was a lot more to that. Ahithophel saw that his counsel wasn't going to be followed. He knew the kingdom was doomed. He was a wise enough man to know that Absalom was destined to ruin. And if Absalom is destined to ruin, guess where he's destined? He's a traitor. If David regathered the throne, he's a traitor. He saw the handwriting on the wall. He saw it wasn't going to go. He saw the whole thing was going to fail. So he committed suicide. I believe he committed suicide because he saw that it would fail and that Absalom didn't have a chance. Not because he was some sore sport or something. That doesn't make a lot of sense. Chapter 18. The big battle. David numbered the people that were with him. He set captains over thousands, captains over hundreds. Now, what did the delay of Hushai's counsel do? It gave David time to be organized. It gave the people of Israel, there were people loyal to David throughout the whole nation. It allowed them to congregate and come over to David's side. It allowed David to gain more than just those in the city of Jerusalem whom he fled with. It allowed the whole thing to polarize into two sides. Notice David has captains over thousands now. He's got a number here. Josephus estimates about 4,000, but nobody knows the real number. Also, David had time to be organized and establish a plan. And so the more time, the better off it's going to be for David. David divided the army into three parts. Verse 3, the people said, "You shall not go. You are worth more than 10,000 to us." Well, this was strategic. See, the whole battle is to smite David. If David is killed, that's the end. If David is alive, even if they lose in the battle, they haven't lost. Because David still could get the throne later. See, Absalom has to kill David in order to get his throne really established. So if David doesn't go to the battle, they can go to battle and either win or lose, and they won't lose. If they win, they got the kingdom. If they lose, they still got David alive somewhere, and they can try again later. Who knows? Absalom may... There may be traitors in his kingdom. He may get assassinated. There are a lot of things that can happen. So they said, "You're not going with us, David." Now that was important. It was a strategic move. The king said unto them, "What seemeth you best, I will do." The king stood by the gate side. Well, basically, the king then was hidden so that he couldn't be killed in this battle. The king commanded Joab, Abishai, and Ittai, the three leaders, saying, "Deal gently for my sake with the young man, with Absalom." All the people heard this charge. Now, David felt, you know, again, I believe, his own guilt and condemnation over this thing and didn't want Absalom slain. He wanted Absalom to receive mercy. So the battle was engaged, and David's men were mightier than the others. They had the psychological edge. Of course, they had the experience and other things. Verse 7, there was a great slaughter, 20,000 men. Absalom, riding through the forest, got caught in an oak. He got caught by his head or his hair, either one. The problem of Absalom was his head was too big. That was his problem. Or if it be his hair, his vanity was his problem, and he got hung by his hair. One way or another, he is hung in an oak. I want you to know your problem is going to get you. You know, one way or another, your demonic manifestation is going to get you. Either that or you're going to get delivered of it. See, there's no coincidence that this is how Absalom met his end. I mean, it's showing forth cause and effect in our life. What you reap, you'll sow. If you have a problem in a particular area, it's going to manifest eventually. Now, the Lord wants to deal with it, and if it does manifest, we can still deal with it and get delivered. But there are times when things are beyond the point and they slay you, cause you to fall or even backslide. Sandy. The wood devoured more people than the sword devoured. Well, it was their boogeyman in the wood. No. This means the forest. More people in scattering and running, pell-mell in defeat and in just utter chaos, went into the wood and fell into pits and got into trouble there or just disappeared. The wood devoured or consumed more of Absalom's army than the sword. And they didn't pursue the battle into the wood, into the forest, except in part. And so many escaped in the wood and many fell in the wood. Now, it was told Joab that Absalom was hanging in a tree. Joab said, "You mean you didn't slay him? You didn't slay the guy?" Verse 11. "I would have given you 10 shekels of silver and a girdle." Verse 12. The man said, David said, "Do not. I follow orders." Verse 14. Joab said, "I may not tarry with thee thus," meaning I got business to do. He took 3 darts in his hand and thrust them through the heart of Absalom. Now Joab took matters into his own hands. That was the type of man Joab was. Whether David ordered or not, he took matters into his own hands. Joab saw there's no way we're going to leave Absalom alive and leave a possible, you know, break in the kingdom or anything else. Now I am not saying Joab did what was right. I'm saying Joab did what was practical and what he deemed necessary. If you do what Joab did in our church, brother, you're on your own. You're on your own. There are some people that want to help out the pastor, like Joab, and take matters into their own hands. And all I have to say is you're on your own. Because some of the things Joab did turned out bad. Some of them turned out good. It's a dangerous place to be. The submission of the man in verse 12, you know, there was submission there. Joab took matters into his own hands. They put Absalom under a great heap of stones. David was told of Absalom's death. Verse 33. The king went into his chamber and wept over his son. You know why David was weeping? I think he held himself responsible, in part, for what had happened. He held himself responsible. A lot of fathers whose sons have backslidden or gotten into some problem, they blame themselves. And they're partly to blame, in a manner of speaking. They are. David has regrets. He didn't discipline Absalom. Absalom grew up a spoiled brat full of pride. He didn't discipline him. Then he banished him from his presence. And then there had been a rift between David and Absalom. So he regretted that they hadn't had the time together they needed. Then he felt the condemnation of his own sin and remembered the prophet's judgment. And a combination of all these things, and David felt guilty himself. And he wept over Absalom, his son. Chapter 19. Joab reproached David, saying, "It sounds to me, David, like you'd rather Absalom lived and we all died, yet we're the ones that saved your hide." Verse 8, the king arose, sat in the gate. The people came before the king, and David blessed the people and so forth. The kingdom was then restored. Shimei was forgiven, although he was put on restriction with his connection. Mephibosheth didn't get fair judgment. David reacted again in the wrong way. And Israel brought David as king back again. Verse 41. All the people of Israel came to the king and said, "Why have our brethren, the men of Judah, stolen thee away, and have brought the king and his household and all David's men with them over Jordan?" Well, the men of Judah were loyal to David, that's why. "And all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, because the king is near kin to us." And then they say, "Wherefore then be ye angry with this matter? Have we eaten at all at the king's cost? Has he given us any gift? Has he shown us any favoritism?" No. He hasn't showed us any favoritism, even though we be of his kin. "The men of Israel answered the men of Judah, 'We have 10 parts in David. We have more right in David than ye do.' The words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel." This is the way it is in the church today. The words of one denomination are fiercer than in other denominations. Do you know the churches are arguing over Christ, fighting over Christ? "We have more of Christ than you." Do you know how Christ looks at that? He's looking at all of his sons together as one family. And no father likes strife in his family. He didn't like the children fighting, bickering, name-calling, selfishness. He doesn't like that. Believe me, that's what we're always working on. Chapter 20. Another problem. Sheba, a son of Belial, brought up a new rebellion of Saul's house. Again, Israel turned from David. It's amazing how fickle people are. I mean, one minute their words are fiercer in verse 43, arguing over them, and then, "Well, all right, if you're going to be that way, I quit. If you're going to be that way, I quit. All right, Judah, you have them. We quit." So they went off after Sheba. Verse 2, "So every man of Israel went up from after David and followed Sheba." How loyal they are. "We have 10 parts in David. All right, we quit." Talk about manifesting. You know, a lot of people are that way. If they can't have their own way, they quit. I mean, it's amazing. I've seen it in this move. If they can't have their mate the way they want him, they're going to divorce him. They're manifesting because they're fearing they're losing him, and so they divorce him. I thought, man, what's going on here anyway? It's a manifestation. Some don't divorce, they just give in to the demon of separation. If I can't have, you know, gimme, 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 all right, wall, wall, separation. This is what the men of Israel did, give in to a demon of separation. We're coming along here. Monday we'll have a test on 2 Samuel. Question. Yes.